This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Now, COVID-19 has really pushed technology innovations, actually more like accelerated technology innovations. And one aspect that we previously had difficulties in adopting was robots. I mean, I don't know, for some reasons, the idea of working with robots or getting robots to do our jobs was just strange.
Yeah, no, Well, it's not strange for me because I've been thinking about it for a long time. But I mean, certainly I think we've seen a huge acceleration over the last few months. You know, something that we used to think of as a novelty. Suddenly we're seeing all of these robots invading these human spaces. But at the same time, we've seen humans retreating from those physical spaces. So there's much more of this kind of dystopian replacement aspect going on with what's happening right now.
Yeah. So The Guardian recently highlighted 5 robots that are helping our battle with COVID-19 by doing things like disinfecting hospitals and delivering groceries. So let me just share some of them with you here. And yes, I know there are Malaysian companies that are doing this as well, but we'll get to that in just a bit. Let's start off with the first one, which I guess, you know, many people, you'd probably know this. If you're a fan of, you know, our show, this shouldn't be a stranger to you. Boston Dynamics. You've probably even seen the viral video of it running around parks in Singapore, reminding humans to practice physical distancing. Weirdly, in the list of the 5 from The Guardian, this for me was like the least creepiest one.
Why? Because when I showed it to a lot of people, they were really actually freaked out by it. Because it's got that very kind of RoboCop aspect to it, especially the version that they used in Singapore that has the loudspeaker that tells people, you know, get more than 1 meter apart and that kind of thing. And of course, if you have seen videos of this, it has that RoboCop noise to its movements. It does that as it moves along. So it is quite a scary thing.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, in the list of The Guardian, it gets even creepier from, you know, the Boston Dynamics.
Well, it does. But before you go there, the Boston Dynamics, the dog, it has actually been released this week for public sale.
Yeah.
So if you do want to have your own robot dog, you can now buy one for about $75,000. But one of the weirdest things for me about it is that the manufacturer is limiting them to 2 per buyer. I think maybe they don't want the risk that somebody's going to buy a whole pack of them. So they're like Mr. Burns in The Simpsons and go, let loose the dogs. You know, nobody wants a pack of robot dogs roaming dangerously across the land.
Out of the 5 in The Guardian, the cutest one of them all, and probably the best name of them all, is called Starship Technologies. It's like a remote control vehicle that delivers food and small supermarket shopping consignments to hungry residents. This is in the UK. It uses the cycling lanes, and it's about knee high with 6 wheels, and it goes at a top speed of 4 miles per hour. This is something that I really like because I'm a big fan of remote control vehicles.
No, and it, like you said, it looks very cute. It looks like a tiny delivery van. But I think for me, one of the coolest things about this is, I don't know if you remember from a few years ago, we talked about an Amazon pilot drone delivery program that was operating, I think it was in Cambridge in the UK. And they started doing deliveries to people. Now, you had to have a certain size of garden because obviously the drone has to be quite heavy in order to be able to support the weight of the things. But it was just the kind of sheer uselessness of the things you could order because the drones couldn't carry much weight. You could order things like a giant bag of popcorn. because it doesn't weigh anything. So, you know, we've come a long way in just sort of a couple of years in terms of the utility, I think, of these kind of drone delivery services.
Mm. Now, here are the remainder three very creepy ones. UVD robots are disinfection robots with UV lights to destroy DNA and RNA of any microorganisms. It's also actually dangerous for humans to come close with this robot because of UV lights. Then there is the Zora bots, which is like a virtual maid robot that you might have seen in exhibition halls, in conferences and stuff. They can actually scan your temperature, identify people not wearing masks, and also learn to see how, you know, your voice has changed or the way you look has changed. And then the creme de la creme comes from Japan with the Omni Labs NewMe robot that replaces students who were unavailable to attend their graduation ceremonies. So they use digital tablets as the heads of the robot that rolls around in two wheels that is about the height of, you know, an average human being. And the human's face is then showed on display via Zoom. And the best part, they actually dressed these robots in black hats and graduation ceremony gowns.
Yeah, I know. That one's kind of fun and a little bit silly. But I think, you know, with a lot of these robots, we do still have that. Again, with this kind of graduation, we do kind of try and personify the robots a little bit. I think it's worth mentioning that during this kind of COVID response, we've seen much larger scale robots and automation happening. So, for example, in China, we've seen things like entirely automated kitchens. So, you know, the kitchen itself is a giant robot,
yeah.
And that's allowed people to be fed at times when either the human workforce has either been sick or hasn't been able to come to work because of social distancing. So, you know, like you said, some of it is a little bit scary. Things like the UVD robots, for example, we've mentioned those on MSP a couple of times. They're fantastic because it means a human cleaner doesn't have to go into hospital rooms or office spaces that have been contaminated by coronavirus or any other pathogens. So it removes that risk from people. But yes, you're correct. There's still that risk to human beings because the technology they're using to sterilize is just as poisonous to us as it is to those pathogens. So. Yeah, there are still a lot of curves to work out, I think.
In a way, it's kind of like, you know, giving robots the superpower. And our superpower is, you know, working from home.
Yes, ours is working from home. Theirs is just being omnipotent and occupying the streets and telling us what to do and generally scaring the living whatever's out of us.
Now, there's also a Malaysian company that's called DF Automation and Robotics that specializes in manufacturing, marketing, and developing robots like these to help medical personnel. And it's called the Makcik Kia 19 or the MCK 19. I did a show with them earlier during the MCO period. So, you know, go out and check out the podcast if you just search for MCK 19 on our app or website. Really cool stuff about how, you know, like you said, I think the adoption of robots during this point of time is at an all-time high, and you know it's great to see that it's accelerated the growth. Anyways, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about aliens, and we've got GeekTunes after this. BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back. It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandra, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Now, it's been a while since we actually talk about aliens. They may not be little green men. They may not actually arrive in a vast spaceship. But according to new calculations, there could be more than 30 intelligent civilizations in our galaxy today that's capable of communicating with others. Now, experts say that the work it not only offers insights into the chances of life beyond Earth, but could actually shed light on our own future and our own place in the cosmos. According to the professor of astrophysics at the University of Nottingham and also the co-author of this research, you know, Christopher, he was saying that it is extremely important and exciting time because for the first time, we actually really have an estimate of the number of active, intelligent, communicating civilizations that we could potentially contact and find out if there is other life in the universe, something that has been a question for thousands of years and still not answered.
I'm actually very, very upset about this. No, genuinely, because, you know, as a massive consumer of science fiction during the kind of 1980s, during my childhood, Douglas Adams led me to believe that the magic answer to everything was 42. You expect the ultimate answer to the question of everything to be 42. And to find out that it's only 36, it's kind of like, oh no, my expectations are kind of falling short. But I mean, I do find this absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, we talked, I think, a little bit, was it last week or the week before, about just the kind of mathematics of kind of predicting physics and astrophysics, and the strangeness of it being quite uniform, that we are able to use mathematical models to quite accurately predict these things. So to be able to look at this data and to think of that massive universe and calculate, okay, there are 36, you know, potential life forms or alien civilizations in that entire thing. One, it's incredible we can do that, but, you know, the scale of space, wow, that means we're still so alone, because just if there were 36 people in a town, you'd think, wow, I've really got nobody to talk to. 36 civilizations across our universe. Wow, that's really, really small.
You know, it's like you mentioned, there's a lot of mathematics that goes into this, and I won't bore you with the details, but go and check out the article on The Guardian, because it really does try to explain how did they come up with this number. What's important for you to know is that, one, the report says that, you know, this number is still kind of like conservative. So, you know, it's still, it could be 42, Matt. So you can still keep, you know, hope.
It better be 42. And if it's not 42, it has to be multiples of 42.
And, you know, not least, it is as based on how long our own civilization has been sending out signals into space, a period of just 100 years so far. And the team that did the study also added that our civilization would actually need to survive at least another 6,120 years for two-way communication. So, you know, that's like, you know, the report was saying, like, you know, they would be quite far away. Maybe 17,000 light years is on their own calculation as the closest one. So you're right. You know, we're pretty much alone, even though, you know, it's like, oh, 36, that's a lot. But nope.
I know. That's exactly what I mean. We'd be so spread out across that universe that it would be almost impossible for us to be in touch with each other. I mean, we've talked on the shows before about potentially sending people outside our own galaxy, or not outside our own galaxy, rather outside our own solar system. But, you know, scientists potentially looking at spacecraft that take generations of people. But when you think about the kind of length of modern history of people, I mean, cities have been around for what, sort of 4,000, 5,000 years. We've had space travel for 70 or 80 years. We've had the internet in the kind of form we enjoy now for, you know, maybe 20 years. When you look at 17,000 years to communicate with another species, that is a vast amount of time within the kind of human cognition span. It just is simply kind of overwhelming.
You know, so I guess it is a good reminder that while, you know, we may have to just wait for another 6,000 more years before we can have a two-way communication, it's probably good to reach out to, you know, some of your friends and family over video call over this weekend, and, you know, because we are pretty much alone, but, you know, you're not so alone if you got technology.
Well, yeah,
right?
having said that, we get annoyed when there's like a microsecond delay on the conversation. Imagine a 6,000-year delay.
Oh, well.
In your conversation.
Yeah. What do we have for gig tunes, Matt?
Well, we have a song. I think we've played this before. It's called The Detectorists. It's by a guy called Johnny Flynn. There's no real reason for playing this song other than it makes me feel good, and I think we need more of that right now.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.